I remember when we first started this whole podcast thing, we just came up with the name God Journey. Some people didn't like it. I think it's perfect. This is not about me. This is not my journey. I am a supporting actor in a greater drama that's going on. This is about him.
Thinking outside the box isn't about whether you go to a meeting or not. It's about breaking free of the obligations of religious performance and living in the adventure of a relationship with God as our Father.
Two little guys talking about life, that's a good thing.
Slinging freedom all over the place and making no apologies, this is The God Journey.
Well, I'm Brad Cummings.
And I'm Wayne Jacobson
from
South Africa.
Are you really?
I will be when we
come
play
on.
This, but I'm...
Give me some accent there, brother.
I don't care for South Africa. I know it when I hear it, but no, I have not even begun to work. By this time
next
week...
Get your best Afrikaans on.
By this time next week, I'll be able to pull it off, but...
Yeah, there you go.
I'll actually be in Ladysmith, South Africa as this airs. And
why are you going?
A brother there invited me over to come to a retreat. They've got about 30, 40 people coming in from all over South Africa to a camp for a guy. It got filled up in within a few days and weeks, and they've had to turn people away for a lot, so... I don't know what that's going to be. It's going to be fun. We're going to talk about living loved. And so I'm going in a few days into Johannesburg, and I'll be done with that by the time this airs. And then I'm going to Durban, South Africa. Penny, who we've talked about on this podcast before, has a hospice.
New Jerusalem Ministry.
Yeah, New Jerusalem Ministry out of Kansas. And she's been over there for a couple of years stint now trying to get a AIDS care thing in the township of Tazuma. 500,000 people living in the squalor of a township, 48% HIV positive. And Sarah and I have been partnering with her on that ministry thing for quite a while. So actually, Sarah is going with me this trip, and we're going to be to Zuma for about 3 or 4 days. We're doing some training there, as well as hanging out with some free rangers from South Africa. And then on to Cape Town for 4 or 5 days after that, and doing the same thing there. And I feel bad for my hosts, as gracious as they are to have me come and open their homes and all that stuff. Time we put it out where we were and who to contact, I think they've all been pretty overwhelmed with people that are going, how do we get in? And then there's all kinds of people who want personal time. Can I have lunch with Wayne? Can Sarah? Can I? I'm going, okay, we can have 37 lunches a day, but after that, we've got to cut it off. So,
dude, you come back pretty large.
We're trying to fight that off. That's pretty tough, but we're working on it.
Do you love doing that stuff?
I'd say the hardest thing I will do this month is drive to Los Angeles Airport on Monday night to get on a flight to go to South Africa. I love being there. I love helping people on this journey. I love, you know, giving them a face-to-face to things that they've iconized because I'm an author on a book or a voice on a podcast. I love when I'm there, getting there, 19 hours on a flight.
Not so fun.
No. I've told people all over, there's nothing about Wayne that loves the experience of travel. I know people who just, you know, man, can't wait to get on a plane, a boat, go live in a third world country.
Dude, I saw your seat cushion.
I grew up in a... That's actually because I know it's hilarious, and people make fun of me using it, but I actually got injured in a deal in Germany. I sat on a hard bench one day, and it wore out some sheath coating on some nerve endings.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it's rebuilding, but every time I go and I sit in an airplane seat...
For too long.
So I've got a little air cushion thing that I blow up and sit on. Every time I've used it on this last trip, the guy sitting next to me, the gal sitting next to me goes, what is that for? And I tell him, they'll go, where did you get it? And I've got to pull it out so we can write down the web address as to where to buy this little pillow. It is
nice, cushy, tushy.
It is wonderful. I can't tell you.
The way you said wonderful, the look on your face is priceless.
Even the 5-hour flight, it's wonderful. So Sarah and I will be going and looking forward to it, looking forward to the people we'll meet. And it seems like, you know, The Shack and my two books available in Africa and Afrikaans.
Something's happening over there big time.
It's a culture in turmoil. It's not like our culture. I mean, it's very much a turmoil culture. They're moving from apartheid to some kind of equality and the haves and the have-nots, and 85% of the country is black and mostly impoverished, and the 15% that has all the goodies are white and, you know, stole them 150 years ago. And And, you know, that's no different than most countries in the world, except here in America, we wiped out everybody we stole it from. So, I mean, that's the only – seriously. It's not like
– a lot of them are moving back.
Well, the reason we didn't have apartheid here – I mean, we did in some ways, but we destroyed the people who had this land first.
The not, native who?
Not true there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Native Americans are gone.
That part of our world really pains me. And as I travel as a white guy in the world, I'm not ever unaware of it. And in South Africa, you're not ever aware of it. I mean, it's a culture at risk. People live behind bars. And literally, their homes are barred.
Fortresses, yeah.
And sometimes even metal gates inside the house. So if they get into one section of the house, they can't get into the other section of the house. And Sarah goes, and I'm going, why? Sarah's a real risk taker. Well, football season is hot and heavy here in the States, eh?
It is.
It is, and everybody, this is one thing I just
the
got.
The four best kids on my kids' team all got crunched so bad in one game.
Yeah?
It was terrible. I sat there going like, excuse me, can we stop the game and weigh those kids? Because they're in a whole different league. I mean, they're all helmet size bigger. And I'm just going like,
golly. Oh, where they're actually playing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they just crunch the four best players.
That's no good. I thought about this, though. I was reading Sports Illustrated a couple weeks ago, and right after they'd done their Super Bowl picks, you know, before the season ever begins, they plot out who wins what divisions and how the playoff games go and who wins the Super Bowl. And fans boast and brag. I mean, talk radio here in the States about sport. My son listens to it all the time. I just think it's crazy. Well, I thought this was cute, though. In the next edition of Sports Illustrated, it was talking about those people that were upset with the Super Bowl picks that this guy made. He said, don't worry. I haven't been right about my Super Bowl prediction since 1994.
Here we are, 15-some years later, 20-some years.
It's been 15 years since he's got a Super Bowl right. And here's what made me think about
What's
that.
What's up with that?
How much of our lives, and sports, I think this is infamous in sports. I mean, as soon as the Sunday games are over here, they're already talking about who's going to win the games the following Sunday. And they're never right. Nobody gets that all right. Even the best prognosticators are slightly around 50-50, maybe a little above it, maybe a little below it. And yet we waste so much time and energy on speculation. And when I was reading this, I thought of Paul's language to Timothy. About don't waste any time.
Vain speculation.
On controversies and speculations. And I tell you what, as I travel around and talk to people and even now answer questions in kind of open-formed times where we're kind of talking through this journey, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't 90% of theology either controversy or speculation?
I was wondering if you could go there, because I sat there like, the first thing I could think of is, gosh, the bulk of what happened in seminary and theology, and I'll be honest, I enjoy some of that. I really do. But it seems like so much of what gets stirred up isn't about actual experiences and reality. It isn't about living this out. It is theorizing and extrapolating and pontificating, and just going like, excuse me, how much of that is based in fact and in truth and in practice?
Yeah, and why are we, who all have the same book and all believe in the same hermeneutical principles, have so many disagreements on so many theological issues that I'm with you. If it's a friendly conversation of people who are interested in theological things or want to spend some time speculating about what might this mean as we roll on toward the end of the age or the age to come, I don't mind being in that conversation lightly. I don't enjoy being in that conversation
heated,
where people have an answer that is the only right one, and dad gummit, if you're not agreeing with me, you're a heretic and going to hell.
Yeah, you're not just a person of a different opinion.
No.
You are the devil.
And I like that Timothy says, Paul says to Timothy, listen, have nothing to do with that. I do, because some of the conversations that I'll get in, particularly when we're having a session about learning to live in that space of being loved and learning to listen to Father and learning to know Him. And then somebody throws out, you know, what about eternal security? Or, you know, was Calvin right about the tulip thing? Or the, you know, there's a part of me that just goes.
And he's doing a gag me for all those who cannot perceive the podcast.
Throwing the finger down the old gullet. Not that finger, but the index finger down that gullet. Because I really don't, even where I used to be interested in some of those things, here's where I'm at in my own journey. It is everything I can do today to wake up in the love of the Father, to know what it is to love Sarah, to know what it is to engage the people that are coming across my life today, to know what challenges and decisions that I have to make on this day to make life make sense coming as it unfolds. I really don't want to waste one bit of that energy on controversy or whether it's sports or theology. I don't listen to any sports radio. I don't watch all those TV shows trying to figure out who's going to win the next game. And I enjoy football. I enjoy watching a football game on TV. But I'm really done. If we really caught what we talked about in the last podcast, this is really a journey. You get to know God, and you get to wake up in the adventure of learning to listen, learning to follow, as best you do it today, and wake up again the next day and go again.
And the Holy
Spirit. That is so much more fun than trying to figure out, what are we going to do in heaven? I couldn't care less. I figure that's going to be just fine when we get there. And if I have extra...
Excuse me, is there a movie on this flight?
And after I love Sarah and love my children and take care of the things God puts in front of me to be involved in today, if I have time left over, the last thing I want to do is speculate theology. I'd rather find me a little granddaughter somewhere and play with that.
Well, you know, I think I've watched a number of different, like, broken relationship things and trying to, like, massage different sides of the issues. You're just going, like, gosh, most of what really gets rankled wrong is where they've stopped talking to each other, and they're doing their little chess moves of speculating about what the... It's like, how will you ever know unless you actually talk to them? Do you really know what's going on?
Yeah.
No. Haven't done that. Have you talked to them? No. And it's like, well, why wouldn't you do that?
I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because you're going to find out you're wrong.
And that really kind of blows the whole deal, doesn't it?
It really screws up your strategy. If you're out to rip somebody off and to cheat them like crazy and to do that, because here's where speculation goes there. I know exactly the kinds of situations you're talking about. Where speculation goes there, when you can no longer deal with facts, you've got to deal with, well, that's why they're doing this. Speculating motives is the way we destroy people. And the reason why you don't get with them is because you're going to find out your little judgment about their motives is wrong. And you just can't handle that. Because if it is wrong, you're just being a jerk.
Well, translate that back into theology. If this is about relationship...
You want it in the Greek?
No. But here you are, speculating as opposed to talking to the source.
Yeah.
Last podcast was talking about the whole, let's learn to let go of the doc and let's relate to him directly.
Yep.
Religious speculation. Let's have a religious argument. That whole dynamic is like, why not ask as opposed to, because I don't believe that even godly principles can just be unilaterally applied to every situation.
We don't have to ask. We have a book. The book tells us everything. That's what a theologian is going to tell you.
The sufficiency of the scriptures.
The theologian really is a legal approach to a text that says if we can just put...
I'm not liking lawyers a lot right now.
Oh, yeah, I hear that. But it's the legal approach. Even putting little colons and numbers after things, that's exactly what a law...
We chapterize the love letter.
A law opinion looks like. It's the same thing. Well, according to this, paragraph 26:3 in such and such a deal. But isn't the deal... We're going to find what we want, and speculation and controversy fuels the unengaged. Because people who are engaged with...
Speculation and controversy fuels the unengaged.
The unengaged with God. Because if you know the Father I know, I don't think that has a draw. It only had a draw for me when it was filling a vacuum.
Yeah.
When the vacuum's filled, when God's alive in your life... And no, I don't know all the mysteries of the world. I love the fact that this God I'm related to...
I don't know everything about.
I don't have a clue other than just this little grasp that he loves me, and he knows the best stuff about my life. And if I can live in that little slice of it, life is wonderful. Even in crap, even in the most... Sorry, I know I did that to Julie again. Julie said, I got to stop listening to my podcast with you guys. I know.
My grandpa, you said crap.
I didn't mean that. Edit point. Even, because somebody wrote me that the other day. Somebody said, I just can't believe in God. I work with deformed children and handicapped, mentally and emotionally handicapped children. That's their job. And she read He Loves Me, and she wanted to argue with me about it. She said, when I go to church and I hear people talk about, you know, I lost my little job, and I prayed and prayed and prayed, and God gave me this, or I need a new car, and God gave me a new car. And I sit there and look at these dear, dear kids every day that are severely damaged. And God's out, what, healing blisters on feet and, you know, giving somebody $10 for a meal. And He doesn't touch something like this. Then I don't have any time for your God. And so we're having a pretty interesting conversation back, because I like to blow that up a little bit. But I understand the point. The reality of God is not just a success deity. How many goodies can you get? God is as real.
See, you just lanced a herd of sacred cows on that one.
I didn't mean to.
No, I think you meant to, and you should do it again.
And light the barbecue. Let's cook that. Let's cook them. That'd be good eating.
No, I do. I think most people take the concept, not the person, the concept of God, and they want to marry it to their ideal dream of comfort and goodies.
Yep.
And they call that some belief thing, and if God isn't doing that, well, I don't like God. And it's like, I don't think it has anything to do with the person of Jesus.
No.
Because if you read the stories, it's like, exactly where was God immune from difficulty and suffering in terms of His earthly existence in a body? He walked through this thing just like us. And the whole point is, guess what? He knows what you're going through.
Yeah. And many times with loud cries and tears, He poured Himself out to God. We think He just did it in the Garden of Eden.
Stop there for a second. The whole bit of how is this some antiseptic theory you can apply if God, very God, is experiencing the emotions that are drawing Him to loud cries and tears?
Right.
That is part of the beauty of this thing called life. It may not be just the awful. There may be something amazing about the fact that, guess what? That is part of this process.
And it keeps God from being the success deity that says, I can trust Him when life is good and when life is brutally painful and I'm not getting what I think I need. If God can't be as real in that moment, then He's not God, a very God. Scripture is replete with the idea that you're not getting out of God this primrose, rose-colored path. You're not getting it. This world doesn't exist. This world's got some brutal stuff in it. There will be blessings. Yes, there will be. Last time I was in this township in South Africa, where Sarah and I are going to be this week, last time I was there, here's this squalor. Half these people are dying, HIV, AIDS. We watch little kids play in the street. Two of them AIDS infected, kicking a ball, playing with sticks, laughing uproariously. You know, there's something about that really touched me. Our idea of what joy is all my circumstances are ordered well. Rather, sometimes there's joy just in the moment of a little play with some other kids, and they have as much delight in their heart as I see in my grandchildren's hearts at times when they're just playing and goofing around.
We're trying to take joy, divorce it from a moment that I can experience and embrace, and trying to make it a principle or a right that I get to experience forever. And it's like, I don't see where you get to do that.
Well, I don't see where it works.
Well, no, yeah, I don't think it exists, but I don't even see where the expectation lies that is what this thing called life is.
Well, I'll tell you how it worked for me. If God loves me, and if God is personal and cares about the details of my life, then that whole thing of why does bad things happen to good people, which has always been this horrible theological construct, if I loved me, I wouldn't let me hurt, so I would fix all those things. That's just the way we run it.
But the fundamental premise there is, guess what? Perhaps the way you and I think about us is not exactly the way God looks down and ordered this universe.
Of course, that's just not possible. Of course God's going to think like I think. I've got His best insight about everything.
Because I am God.
No, I'm God, but I know me. And if I love me, I would give me all the things I want for me.
I know, but there's the one, like, foundation point of all that is me, 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 me.
And it underscores.
And I'm pretty sure that life is not all about me.
Oh, I'm sure it's not. I'm sure from God's perspective it isn't. That's the one line from Bruce Almighty that I loved more. There's a movie about this guy that gets to be God for a weekend because God's going to go on vacation because he's a whiner. And he overwhelmed with prayer requests. So he answers all of them yes. And chaos ensues. And he's sitting there as God comes back to him, and he's just frustrated going, I gave them what they wanted. And God looked the God character at them and says, since when do people know what they really want? That is as profound a statement. Because at 56, I'm not doing one thing I thought I'd be doing at 56. When I was 25, 30, 35, and all these visions and prophetic things that people had given me, and some I'd made up on my own.
You could only see his facial expression.
But certain they were God, certain that my whole life was going to be filled with the center of God's blessing. And what? How you extrapolate what that would look like, and then God frustrates that at every corner. I remember answering the phone one day, how's your life going? And it's in the middle of a pretty ragged time in my life. And I said, you know what? I think God has disappointed to the nth degree every desire I've ever had. The phone was quiet for a long, long time. And then he goes, is that a good thing? And then I was silent for a while.
That's a great question.
I know.
That is a great question.
You know what I said? I said, it's a great thing. It was at that moment of realizing.
That was a eureka, though.
It was. It culminated a eureka. It wasn't like I suddenly discovered it. It was
an epiphany.
That's what this has all been about. This is a great thing. Finally, Wayne is free of the tyranny of his own expectations of God for his own life. That was euphoric. Absolutely. I've lived in the joy of that since. It's been
13
years.
I don't think you get there without it getting then totally dissed. I mean, I really don't think we think it's an illusion until we recognize just how dissed that illusion gets all the time.
And you've done everything you think you're supposed to do to get God to fulfill it.
Yeah, it's like, wait a minute. God, the contract. I behaved. I did the deal. I even did the extra credit.
Until religion come along.
The goodies.
Did you do enough?
Yeah, and I did that too.
I did more than enough.
Yeah. And it's like, I do think that it's that the whole do-to-be deal. It's like, if I do this, then I get to be and I get to get. And it's like, guess what? That's all about you.
It is about you.
And I think the central displacing that happens in salvation is I get dethroned from my throne.
Yeah, and because religion is a consumer-based reality, religion just sustains.
Builds your throne.
It still is all about you. You getting blessed. You working God. You getting the things you want. And I do think this is what Eugene Peterson translates in 1 Peter about God. Jesus has been through everything you're going through and more. So learn to think of your sufferings as a weaning from the old sinful habit of always having to have your own way.
Ooh, say that again.
He said, look at your sufferings. First of all, Jesus has been through everything you're going through and more. So that's what you said earlier. So don't think Jesus isn't in this space you're in. The disappointment, the disillusionment, the brokenness.
Nobody knows.
He knows. And God didn't save him from all that stuff.
See, I don't think we ever stop there and think that through.
No. He was rejected, lied to, denied, betrayed, tortured, tormented. Oh, my gosh. And misjudged by his friends. If you'd been here, my brother would not have died. The whole Mary Martha thing. So he says, learn to think of your sufferings. This is 1 Peter 4, verses 1 and 2. Learn to think of your sufferings as a weaning from the old sinful habit of always having to live your own way.
Ooh.
And then this is a kicker. Then you're free to wake up every day, free to do what God wants, rather than being tyrannized by what you want. Most people, see, here's what we think our wants are the God-given things that will make my life wonderful. Instead of our wants are a tyranny that will drive you to misunderstand God because he's not going to fulfill your...
He's not doing your deal.
He's not doing your deal. And so you get to the point of,
hey, God didn't show up at work
today. I can't trust him because I've been praying and I've been doing this. And God, you know, you think if he loved me, if I loved me, I would do that. And you got God all anthropomorphized in your clothes. And he looks worse than Brett Favre in a Viking jersey. Let me tell you that.
But he had a good game.
belies the point. In any case, God is not going to fulfill your own deal. he comes into your life, that free from the tyranny of what you want. That to me, this is the space that God continues to invite me to live in. And when I'm in that space, it doesn't matter what's happening around you. It's good. It's gold because he's with you. Even when it's cruddy, hard, brutal, disgusting, he's still there. Even when it's not fixing what you'd swear a loving God would fix, that you see, if you don't live in that space, then in those brutal moments, you're divorced from the very Father whom you need to be inside that thing with you, not outside saying you haven't done enough.
You're abandoned by your own presuppositions. And we think that means God's abandoned me. No, 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 no. He never left.
Never.
The indwelling Holy Spirit. Excuse me. How do you get rid of that guy? God's there. And if we could somehow see through the malaise of our expectations, the tyranny of our wants, you know, all this other stuff, it's like, you know what? I don't even know what I need.
True.
I really don't. I'm sitting here going like, okay, I do know this. I've marveled twice this week at things that I went, gosh, I'm different. I just experienced something going like, wow, I didn't have the emotion I was expecting to have. I was bracing for it. And it never showed up. And I went, okay, how'd that change?
Something's moved.
Yeah, something's different. So somebody rearranged the furniture. What happened there? And I sat there going like, wow, that was not the fruit of Brad's self-improved efforts. I'm just going like, no, wait a minute. I know me. That's how I normally respond. I didn't respond that way. And I'm like, when did that change?
I love hearing that from people on this journey.
How did that change?
Do you?
I'm not even sure how that changed. I don't even know. I mean, I would never have asked for the circumstances under which I had the eurekas.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I'm not liking those.
Yep.
Those aren't the blessings I perceived. And yet, they are the blessings that I think, wow, if I hadn't journeyed this way, I don't think I would understand some of the things that are happening right now in the own transformation of my soul that I am not as in charge of that I thought I was.
Yeah.
Because I've been working on these things over here and haven't budged. And all this stuff on the left over here is changing. And I'm going like, well, that's cool. I just hadn't made that the priority.
I love when people discover that. I hear that more and more now and on the road and hanging out and talking with people. People just saying, I got to tell you something, man. I was in this circumstance the other day, and the old Julie, Jennifer, Bill, Bob, somebody wasn't there. The way I always have reacted wasn't there, and I was aware of it and laughing. Inside going, where did that go?
Yeah.
And to me, that doesn't give real weight to when Paul talks about, forbid it that I should boast in anything except the cross of Christ, whom I died to the world. Because when you're changing you, self-righteousness always gives you something to boast about.
Oh, but brother, it stinks.
I went to an anger management seminar, and I got my anger under control now, and I got it all fixed up, and I'm good. And I'm not against anger management. If you're whacking people, you probably need an anger management seminar. And that may help you restrain some things. But transformation comes when you're in those exact situations in which you would have been enraged in the past, and it's not there, and you know you're not responsible. Something else happened in you.
And you know what I think might be behind that forbid it not that I should boast? Is you're sitting there going like, you know what? Why rob yourself of that incredible moment of reflection that just says, I think he loves me. I think he changed me. I think he's at work according to his will and good pleasure. And I'm just going like, golly, that is...
Gomer Pyle.
Yeah.
Golly.
Where did that go from?
Wow.
And I just got...
Been watching a little black and white TV lately.
I have had laugh out loud moments of just, no way. Where did you sneak up? I mean, because I feel like I got juked by Jesus. I thought he was doing something on the right, only to find out, oh my gosh, you just touched me on the left. And it's like, Lord, thank you. Because I had rearranged the priorities very different.
Right.
I don't know why I had, but I had.
Yep.
And I was working so hard over here and not seeing anything happen.
What I love about transformation like that is it opens up a whole new world. the whole language of the Psalms about taking us into a spacious place. When I can be in situations that used to make me angry and not get angry, it makes life wider. When I can be in a situation in which I would have normally focused on me and how it's affecting me, and the thought isn't even there first. The thought is of someone else and what they're going through and how it is. Isn't that just seem more spacious? It just seems like you come out of this little hole in the ground of Wayne-ness and live in a bigger world that isn't all centered. And I'm not there yet. I mean, good gracious, I've still got stuff I want God to change in my life. I've still got things going. Man, I love that that has moved, but God, did you remember we were talking about this too?
And yeah, I've joined you on it. Like, hey, God, over there, please.
And when I forget, Sarah gives me her list, so I'm all good. Well, Sarah's gracious. She didn't give me a list.
You know, I'm getting recaptured with a sense of wonder at the glorious of this adventure. And I'm just going like, you know what? And it's not because it's all neat and nice and wonderful. Because, like, yep, frankly, it's not that at all right now.
Yep.
And yet I'm still going like, oh my gosh. Those verses when you say, you know, count it all joy, brethren. You just go like, I'm getting some of those things. I'm emotionally connecting to verses I've always went, huh? And you just go like, wow, God, I see you in the midst of this too. Where my theology, I mean, I would have liked, oh sure, yeah, God's there too. But my emotions never went, nah, I don't think so. And now I'm going like, well, yeah, maybe he is.
Which is why every New Testament writer, everyone, talks about God's amazing ability to work in tragedy, in betrayal, in hurt, in need, in brokenness, to further the glory of transforming us. So,
yeah.
So we're not in our sufferings with, oh, crud, you know, bad years, what am I going to do? The crocodile's got my feet, pulling me into the pond. But God can be in this too. God can make himself known here. And all that life is about isn't summed up in the 70, 80 years or even 30 years we might get in this life. That's not what sums it up for God. God's purposes transcend this age. And so every writer of the New Testament tells us, hey, bad stuff happens. Make sure you're not causing it. Don't cause bad stuff for you. Don't cause bad stuff for, I love that. Don't earn it. And when you're in it, realize God's bigger. Here's where character's built. Here's where perseverance is won. Here's where you become a different person.
Yeah, and it's not ordaining those wrong, sinful things. I think that's where people theorize into a weird corner, where you're just going like, you know what? You've just given God the personality devil, because I don't think he authored that. But the great news about this planet and this God is he's bigger than that. And so in spite of those things, and yes, they're present dangers, they can mess you up. He's bigger than that. And he can navigate you through, around, under, over, or in spite of, to work in you, to change you into the very nature of his son.
Yeah, it's funny. We used to always wrestle with that. Did God orchestrate this suffering? Or did God specifically choose this bus to ram into my car today so that I could learn more patience? And that may used to be the thinking of, you know, God's just doing that. And yet when you figure out how this world really works as you get older, you realize, gosh, with so much disgusting brokenness in the world, God doesn't have to create any. It's not like he lacks the raw materials.
It's not like it's ever present.
Yeah, it's like, wow, it's like having your kids over, grandkids over, and expecting the house won't get messy. What were you thinking? God created humanity and the devastation of sin. I mean, gosh, that's
just part of this package, whether you like it, agree with it, acknowledge it or not.
And God hasn't fixed all that yet. But the day is coming when the kingdoms of this world become the kingdoms of our God and of his Christ. And what does that look like, Brad? I have to know. Let's speculate.
Okay, I don't have anything for
you. Are we going to sit on lawn chairs?
Yeah.
Are we
going to
play golf?
No, we got those flight cushions.
Ah, flight cushions.
Flight cushions.
Hopefully my rear end won't need them there.
But you know what?
I don't think we've ever stopped to be amazed at the fact that at the breaking of the world, where it all gets all messed up, I think most of us would have just sort of hit reset. Do over. We would shift to a plan B, or let's just hit reset, let's start over, because it got all messed up. I love the fact that God doesn't start over, but he works with.
Well, he had a couple of reset buttons in the Old Testament, didn't he?
I don't think so.
Mostly.
I don't think so.
You don't think Noah's a reset?
No.
What is it?
Where are we in this?
Where's
you got
the
me on my subject. I got the greatest rescue story never told right there.
Well, we'll have to get to Noah someday.
The reality is, I mean, I think it's important. The reason I would say no is because I see God going, you know what? Yes, that's there. Yes. God's not denying. He's not pretending. It's not like he got ostrich with his head in the sand. The reality is God saying, okay, yeah, I'm bigger than that. Hang on. Walk with me. This is no big deal. Be of good cheer. For in this life, you will have trouble. But be of good cheer. For I have overcome this world. I just go like, you know what? You can laugh in the midst of great pain if you're holding on to the hand of the one that says, I'm bigger than that. Yes, it may consume you. Yes. But it's not going to be able to consume him. And that's whose life I'm learning to live by.
And at the end of the day, he's going to win.
Yes.
The very last verse of 1 Peter 3, I quoted 1 Peter 4, that little bit about being tyrannized by what you want. Right before that, it says, Jesus gets the last word on everything. When I read that, I think about my dad in the vineyard I grew up in. Dad, no matter who was working in his vineyard, people shoveling weeds, people picking grapes, people harvesting, he was always the last guy to walk every row in the vineyard just to make sure it was what it needed to be. And I think of that with God. That this life gets brutal. The wrong people win. Ugly stuff happens. It can be brutal. But at the end of the day, he gets the last word about everything. He hasn't had it yet.
Yeah.
Not yet, but he will. And that's worth hanging around for.
Yeah, and if you don't live your life in view of, I think, eternity, not do we sit in lawn chairs and are there bonbons, it's in light of the fact that this is not all there is. This is a momentary light affliction in light of the eternal weight of glory.
That's from a guy who'd been robbed a few times, stoned a few times, and shipwrecked a few times. Yeah. Momentary light affliction.
Yeah, and you just go like...
Eternal way to glory.
That kind of perspective enables you to just about walk through anything without getting shipwrecked.
So stay well.
Ships ahoy.
Oh, avast the mainsail.
Yeah. How are you, Mickey?
I got to learn that nautical craft.
Thank you for joining us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, you may do so at our website, thegodjourney.com.